Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Second City podcast. My name's Daniel. As ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Callum. And how you been this week, Callum? Obviously, we caught up in person just a few days ago, didn't we? In the big smoke.
Yeah, it only feels like a few days ago that I saw you, Dan, and that's because it was.
Yes.
But in those few days since we saw each other, all is good.
Good, good. Football-wise, though, you've had a pretty interesting week, I think.
Yeah, and we're heading into a huge week as well. So
Yeah.
it's all systems go, and it's also a huge week for you as well, because
Yeah.
as I'm sure we'll get on to, trouble is a brewing.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's all of a sudden just became, well, not all of a sudden, it's been a slow, gradual decline into another relegation battle, but I feel like the last week or so it's become really, like, really serious, if you know what I mean. I'm still positive, but double game week coming up against two away games coming up this week as well. And obviously we'll get into what happened this weekend just gone as well. So yeah, all to play for and very, very important times. No on the beach early for us this year. But yeah, we'll get onto all that later. We're going to have a little discussion about sort of some decisions being made in the wider game of football as well. There's obviously been talk about sin bins and blue cards and stuff. So we'll get into all that later, as well as like our results and what's coming up and so on. But Callum, should we start as ever with what we're wearing?
Absolutely.
Cool. I feel like you guessed mine first last week.
Yeah. I think you should guess first this week.
Yeah, sure. So it's a sort of light blue.
Yeah, it's a light blue Kappa number with a nice claret W88.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I think you only had that sponsor for one season. I'm going to say 2019 away, I'm going to say. Or third? 2019
so this
away,
is
I'll
the
say.
2019-2020 away shirt.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I would show you, but I haven't got enough space to turn around, but it does have Hourihan 14 on the back. This sort of pattern on the front was supposed to represent the gates of Villa Park. I don't know if you're getting that.
That sounds like some media bollocks to me. That sounds like PR
some
nonsense
club
to me.
PR.
Yeah.
This is the first kit that we ever had this ugly thing on the sleeve.
What is it, like a
It's another betting
shirt sleeve
sponsor for
sponsor?
some,
Yeah.
yeah.
International
I
betting sponsor.
hate sleeve sponsors. I don't like sponsors on the front anyway, at the best of times, especially when they're the gambling ones. But sleeve sponsors, get rid of them. Or give me an option not to buy it. We had that for the last 3 years, and then they bought it back this year. And I'm not very happy about it. Like, I don't want, especially this one. This is a huge patch on this sleeve as well. Like you know it's there.
Yeah.
It's not exactly comfortable. And then, so yeah. And anyway, we'll talk about the season anyway. This is when we're in a period of where we first started having three kits. And so this kit never really got worn a lot. Mostly because we play in claret and blue. And the third shirt was like a green and black. So most of the time we couldn't wear the home shirt. We'd wear the green and black kit. So
Yeah.
this only had a handful of outings, really. To my knowledge, we across all competitions, we won one game in it.
Fair
We
enough.
didn't win a single Premier League game in it. We beat Crewe in the second round of the League Cup 6-0, and we definitely wore this shirt. But otherwise, the Premier League was all a disaster. I remember we lost to Southampton in this kit just before the week before the League Cup final. We lost 2-0 in a really terrible, terrible game. I'm struggling to think of some of the other games we wore it, because we wore it against Arsenal away when we were robbed of a late penalty, and where we really should have won or got something from the game and just imploded and threw it away. We wore it away at Man United, where we had a really positive 2-2. Jack Grealish scored a wicked, wicked goal very early on in the game to put us a goal up, and Tyrone Mings scored late on. Obviously, as we've spoken about before, this season is famous because obviously we stayed up on the final day of the season. We also got to the League Cup final, where we sadly lost to Manchester City. And also, because we wore this kit in this particular game, was a very controversial game at Crystal Palace, where we had a late goal ruled out because Kevin Friend blew the whistle just as Henry Lansbury's strike was about to cross the line and go into the back of the net. he pulled it back for a dive by Jack Grealish, which was actually a foul. But because he blew the whistle before the ball went in the back of the net, they couldn't give the goal. And then VAR didn't even give us the penalty that we should have had. And so we lost 1-0. So we dropped it. We definitely were robbed of a point there. We got it back a
bit
later
on in
the season.
Yeah, you most definitely did get it back. Yeah, you did against Sheffield United, I seem to remember. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The first game of Project Restart. But that game in this shirt is very much forgotten about in the wider context of us gaining a point versus Sheffield United. But, you know, these things all equal out over the course of a season, they say.
That all sounds very... It's like Liverpool had that... Was it this... Yeah, they had that controversial decision against Forest. Like, arguably for them, evens out that Spurs game earlier in the season where they got... And then, but it's funny you mentioned, I know it's different circumstances, but Bellingham had that thing in against Valencia this week for Madrid where he scored and the ref blew the whistle before the goal went in.
It's almost identical to that.
Yeah. I was saying, I can't remember exactly who it was. It was like Stoke or Wigan or someone, like in the Premier League, probably like 2009 or 10. They had a goal like that where I think I can't remember who it was. He like took it around the keeper and the ref blew the whistle like as he was passing it into the net, which I find so funny. Wouldn't be funny if it happened to my team, but it's quite funny when it happens to someone else. Cool. Shall we? Do you want to have a guess at mine? There is a reason I'm wearing this one.
Oh, look at that. So this is a penguin kit, but an away penguin kit, a red and white.
Umbro.
I remember this Umbro centralized badge as well, which you don't have very often.
Yeah.
Another fish and chip investment. It's around this sort of McLeish era, in like the late 2000s. I think it's like is it 06, 07? It's either 06, 07 or 07, 08. I can't remember which one it was. 07, 08.
It's 08, 09. Oh, 08, 09. So you weren't going to get it.
I was out anyway.
Yeah. So as you say, it's a penguin. So the white on, so we brought back the penguin kit the year before for the home shirt, which is like the what, but the white is in the center and the blue obviously is the outside, and this is kind of the red is in the middle and the white is on the outside with the red cuffs, the red sleeve cuffs. Do you any idea why I may be wearing this one, Cal? Why I may be wearing this shirt?
Did you go down in that shirt, Dan?
No.
Was it a great escape?
No. I'm wearing it because aren't you back in Europe this week?
We are back in Europe this
week.
This
is an Ajax tribute, isn't it? Come on, the Ajax.
Of course.
Of course, it's very similar to a traditional Ajax kit. So I thought Villa are playing. Are you playing in Ajax this week as well?
We're playing in Amsterdam on Thursday, yeah.
This is me demonstrating my support for the Dutch boys this week.
You got to wear that. You got to wear that to work on Thursday, Dan.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. But yes, shout out to Pierce for loaning me this one. Goodbye for sure on his part. And so this was 2008-09. We were back in the Championship and we finished second. And this was the year where we beat Reading on the last day to get promoted. I think we were second and they were third going into the day. And we won 2-1 away at the Medeski. I think it was the first away win I went to as well. So that was pretty special.
What do you think of the Medeski as a stadium?
It's been a long... That was... Yeah, 2009. I don't know. I can't really comment, to be honest. I remember we were on the front row of the away end. I can't... I don't know. It's been so long now. And I think... Because I'd only been to like one or two away games before that. It's one of those like modern... kind of bowl grounds, isn't it? Kind of like Derby
it's
or something.
Very bowl shaped.
Other than that, I don't really have many opinions on it, to be honest. Obviously the atmosphere is pretty bad.
I remember the atmosphere being pretty bad.
I remember they had like the clappers and everything, like, you know, they're that kind of team, aren't they? This season we first wore this kit away in the League Cup at Wickham Wanderers, where we won 4-0, which was a nice way to kick it off. And we had a player called Quincy Owusu-Abeyi, who, try memorising that name. I remember he scored in our first game in this kit. It was from long range, it was about 25 yards out, and he just sort of passed it in, though. Like, it was like he put no power into it at all, but it somehow like curled in. It's a really lovely goal. But another cool fact about this kit, so I was doing some research. I was convinced it was like a modern, like, because it's quite a strange colour scheme, isn't it? It's quite a strange, like, design. But I looked it up, and we had in the 1970s for a few years, starting in 1971, we had like a long sleeved shirt, away shirt like this, except the red was on the outside and the white was on the inside, so it was still a Penguin kit, and then it had like the BCFC centralized. So this is kind of like a modern remake of that. But here's another interesting fact. So that season in 1971-72, when we first had this, we also finished second in the second division. Got promoted on the last day. So I thought that was quite an interesting little parallel. So what I'm saying, guys, is bring it back for next season. It's clearly a thing. Get the red penguin kit on for next season.
When you finish second in League One.
Oh yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
good save. We had another one about 2014, where we didn't finish second in the league that year, I suppose. But I'll try to get that one on soon as well. So yes, 2008 nine away, this is.
Very nice stuff. And I guess since you're wearing red and white, do you want to talk about the Southampton game?
Yeah, but what a
What a
lovely
great segue.
segue. You can tell we've been doing this for a few months now. Yeah, Southampton. So we played Southampton at the weekend and lost, remarkably lost 4-3, which is not a scoreline I expected anyway. I don't know if I've ever been to a 4-3. Been a really entertaining game. Weird atmosphere though. There's a lot of, for all the energy and the goals and the excitement, I think myself for sure, I was kind of just mystified how we were in it for so long, how we were for a long time getting a draw out of the game, let alone a win. Because Southampton was so much, they are like an excellent team. They are so much better than us. So in the grand scheme of things, losing to Southampton, there's no shame in it. But to have been 1-0 up and 2-1 up, and then to have pulled it back to 3-3 after having had a man sent off as well, it is always really gutting to lose it in the last minute. But honestly, I know in the grand scheme of things, it puts us right down there out of the relegation zone on goal difference at the minute. But Southampton are, I don't know how they didn't score five, six. They were Adam Armstrong and Shay Adams up front, is an unbelievable duo. They were just the way they moved the ball, they're absolutely outstanding. Positives, we scored some really nice goals. Our first goal, Bakuna puts a crossfield ball across. Koji brings it down and lashes it in with his right foot. Lovely finish in the second minute. I think it was just a game that the atmosphere was kind of strange because it was catching people by surprise. Like we scored after 2 minutes, which was like, whoa, 1-0 up already. And our equaliser to make it 3-3. I don't think anyone expected us to get back in the game against a team that good with 10 men. But Jay Stansfield scored a really good finish for the second one. Bakuna scored the third one. Weird for him because I've mentioned him twice there. He got an assist and got a goal. But he did not have a good game, in my opinion. I don't mean to scapegoat him, but he was at fault for the second goal, Southampton's second goal. In my opinion, he absolutely should have won the ball back in the middle of the field, and he didn't. A couple of passes later, Southampton have scored. That was frustrating. But for me, best player on the pitch, despite making one error for one of the goals, Jay Stansfield is just like just for the work rate he puts in, the amount of running he does. He was brought off with just a few minutes to go, but the amount of work he puts in on the pitch is unbelievable. His pressing game's outstanding. He puts a lot of the players out there to shame, I must say. He'd absolutely be my man of the match, despite for Southampton's third goal. His clearance was where they won the ball. It was a poor clearance, and that's where they won the ball back and set it up for Shay Adams to score. On a side note, really rate Shay Adams not celebrating and for his goal and stuff. So I really rate that and respect that. So
We can
yeah,
also
just a
add
quick.
him to the list this year of ex-Villa and Blues players to have scored against you.
Yeah, true,
It's
true.
getting quite a long list now.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, it really is. Obviously, Deon Sanderson got sent off. He's the captain. Got sent off. At I think we were 3-2 down. I don't know if you've seen it. It's more for a bit of a high foot as he's going in for a challenge. I think it's harsh. I think it's harsh, but I don't see it being overturned if that's what they go for, because it's kind of. I can see why he gave it as harsh as and incorrect as I think it is. I think a yellow would have been fair. I don't think it's an out of control challenge or anything. So yeah, disappointing, but positives to take for sure. But I think Venus's subs didn't always help us. I personally would have taken Bakuna off after his error for the second goal, and I would have got some fresh legs on then. I maybe would have even started. I would have started maybe Tyler Roberts, which is not. He wouldn't normally be in my starting 11, but I think. What he brings to the team, his pressing game and so on, would have actually been really valuable for this game. Move on to two really huge games. this week coming up. Also, on a side note, I don't know where. So we conceded the fourth goal in the 96th minute. I do not know where they got 9 minutes of stoppage time from for this game in the second half. That is, we had 6 minutes of stoppage time in the first half and 9 in the second. I don't know where that came from.
I was talking about this the other day, is that we started the season with like insane 10 minutes of stoppage time and like 7 minutes, 10 minutes, 13 minutes. And that's how it was in like the first 5-6 weeks of the season. And then it just disappeared.
Yeah.
And now in the last 2 weeks or so, it's come back again.
Yeah.
Really
strange.
Weird. Where's the consistency?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I thought the World Cup would be, you remember it was at the World Cup in Qatar where it was kind of introduced, these like super long extra times. But, and then that kind of just never transferred over to like the domestic game. But yeah, in summary though, Jay Stansfield, definitely my man of the match. He's been outstanding. If we can get him back next year, that would be amazing. I don't know how likely that is, but that would be amazing. It also, his goal was a one-on-one as well. And it's so nice having a player go through one-on-one and being confident that they're going to score. Work out what you may of that. Is that a dig at anyone in particular? I don't know, but it was a lovely feeling. Taking advantage of a defensive mistake, getting one-on-one, lashing it home. Lovely. But yeah, he's my man of the match. Three-word review. I'll go. I'll have a four-word match review. Reminded me of Leeds, as in when we lost 5-4 to Leeds in 2019 at home. If you were at that game, just imagine that. That's what this game was like. And then
you could have made that three words. Reminder of Leeds.
Reminder of Leeds. It's not good grammar, though, is it? It's not very English.
No, but you can.
Sure. A grade, I don't know. It's hard. I'll give it three goals, well entertained. Playing against a very good team, I'll give it like a C minus or whatever, a low C, or a on the border between C and D is what I'd give it. I feel like a C is too generous.
We don't do minuses.
I know, but I feel like a C is too generous and a D is too negative.
Okay.
But then we did lose 4-3, so I don't know. One of the two. But yeah, so yes, that was us this week. You had some pretty exciting drama straight afterwards, though, of your own, didn't you? That's Kenilworth Road.
Absolutely. What a great ground. Well, I was just going to say, before I talked on, so we've done a four-word match review and we haven't given a proper grade for you.
Well, you know, it's fine.
We're fudging it, it's fine.
The fans know what I mean.
Yeah. But for us, though, on the other hand, a very dramatic game at Kenilworth Road. More dramatic than I was expecting. More dramatic than it should have been. Not for the first time this season, we've taken a comfortable 2-3 goal lead and then gone into half-time going, job done, that'll do. And kind of fallen apart in the second half. But I'll start, I think, with my three-word match review, which is going to be last-minute winner. And we'll go in with my man of the match as well, which was Ollie Watkins, because he put us into a brilliant two-goal lead. That first half, it was like watching like Ronaldo or Messi. Like, he was just on the player.
Oh dear. You don't do Villa fans any favours sometimes, Cal. So not to abuse stereotypes there. Go on. So Ollie Watkins is the new Messi. Okay.
No, I didn't say that. I said for that first half against Luton, it was like he turned into Ronaldo or Messi. Anyway, so Ollie Watkins was on fire. We raced into a two-goal lead. Scored a header from a corner. I don't think Ollie scores that many headers, so it's quite a nice variety of goals, I suppose, for his highlights reel at the end of the year. When you're playing up against a striker who's really in form like Watkins, would you not mark him from a corner? It was an interesting tactic from Luton not to mark him from a corner. And he had a free header. The second goal is just brilliant all round. We've won a free kick in the around the centre circle. No messing about. While, you know, the Luton players and even some of our own players aren't really paying attention, Douglas Luiz puts the ball down, just pings it over the top of the defence. The only two players were switched on. It was Watkins and Luiz. Watkins times his run perfectly, and the goal is absolutely brilliant. The touch, the first touch to like bring it down and knock it in front of him, is exquisite. It is he could not have done it any better. And then the finish to sort of curl it around the goalkeeper and then in off the post, it might be one of my favorite goals of the season. I thought it was just great play all round, and then the finish is absolutely top quality. We were a bit unlucky not to be further ahead. I think we would have deserved to have been further ahead at half time. Unfortunately, we lost Jacob Ramsey to injury again. That poor guy just cannot catch a break. And so I don't think I would be very surprised to see him in action this week, and maybe next week. We'll see how bad it is, I guess, in Emery's presser towards the end of the week. Second half, completely different. Luton were hopeless in the first half and we were brilliant. And the start of the second half, we did not get going and they just went all at it. I guess that Rob Edwards, I think, said in his post-match presser that they said at halftime, the game has gone, we've got nothing to lose. And so they just went for it. And they if they'd have done that from the first whistle, they probably would have got something out of the game, because that from the 45th minute to the 85th minute, they were absolutely sensational. That we just couldn't really lay a glove on them. They just hit us with everything they had. They're so dangerous from set pieces, and they scored from two set pieces. Side note, for a team that can't defend set pieces, such as us, we don't half give so many of them away through needless and stupid free kicks.
Mm.
I've given Clement Longley quite a lot of kudos on this podcast, because I think for our like fourth or fifth choice centre back, he's done quite well this year. But there's a couple of times, and it just bugs me a little bit, is that if we come under a bit of sustained pressure like we do, he does have slight lapses in concentration and he just gets a bit erratic. And for someone who's actually really a really good ball playing defender, he's going off to do some stupid things where he just like slices a few clearances out for a corner rather than just like maybe just taking that extra fraction of a second to either listen to the shout from the goalkeeper or try and maybe bring it down. That the corner that they score the first goal from comes from him just hacking away a clearance that Emi Martinez is calling for, and he just slices it off for a corner. It's like, well, he probably had time to bring it down, and he also should have let it go to the goalkeeper, and all of a sudden it's still 2-0, and maybe we weather the storm a little bit. But obviously, former Blue Nose Taheith Chong scored a crap goal. It's a proper scrappy goal.
That's kind of what his specialty was. He scored a couple of absolute worldies for us, but a lot of his goals were really sort of dogged goals.
Yeah, it was annoying because Matty Cash makes a brilliant goal line headed clearance where you go, bloody hell, that was brilliant. How did he do that? And we conceded 3 seconds later. Mm. It's like, oh, of course we did. And the second goal is absolutely brilliant cross from Doherty, and Carlton Morris has a great finish at the back post. But to go from 2-0 up and cruising to 2-2, it was like, for fuck's sake, how can we be doing this? And I really wasn't sure if we were going to get anything out of the game. I remember seeing a tweet. Not very often I check my phone during the game because I'm normally behind on a stream. And I don't know why, I just checked and I saw a tweet from For the Love of Paul McGrath podcast, which is a great podcast, where they said, this is a huge 10 minutes for these players. And it really was. And I was like, yeah, that's a good point. And to nick a winner so late on, just kind of out of nowhere, just as we were edging towards stoppage time, we got a bit of possession back. We managed to get up the field a little bit. And as so often happens, if you're a team that's holding on to something, you can just all of a sudden, as you get towards the end of the game, you end up just dropping a bit deeper without even realizing it. And it just allowed us to just make a bit of a half chance. And Moussa Diaby's put a wonderful ball in. And Luca Dean, of all people, for some reason, is at the back post and just manages to head it into the ground and into the back of the net. And it was kind of pandemonium in the away end. It was pandemonium in my house. Like a really, really big and a really crucial last minute winner. In a game where Villa teams of years gone by and generations gone by would have thrown it away and lost the game, not somehow turned it around and won it. So a huge win. I'm only going to grade it a B again because it really was a game of two halves, but then we've nicked a winner at the end. So I can't really grade it. And it's almost generous as a B, but it also harsh at the same time. But we'll give it a B. A very big win that we really needed going into a huge, huge week. Manchester City did us a favour yesterday, although I felt very dirty having to cheer them on yesterday. It felt very wrong. But obviously now is it's 11 points clear of Man United, who are in sixth. So we're looking very good for a fifth place finish. I did see something today. If we hadn't thrown away 6 points against Man United this season, and we did throw away 6 points against Man United this season, we'd be 2 points off the top.
Gee. I think as a Blues fan, it's more, I think I'm looking more at Spurs as the team to get you for sure. I don't see Man United catching any of the top of the five above them now.
The thing with
So
Spurs
yeah,
is, those
Spurs I'm cheering on.
they're so erratic, I find, and they're going to give us a real tough time because they are a good team and they play good football, but they're very erratic and a bit naive, I find, at times, and they're not going to go until the end of the season unbeaten on a crazy winning run because they might be clinging on to a 1-0 and go gung ho for a second and lose 2-1 because it's kind of, that's just how they play. So it's an interesting one. We'll talk more about Spurs later on. I don't know if you saw, Dan, but obviously there's been a lot of talk about blue cards and sin bins in recent weeks, God forbid. But I saw that Gianni Infantino did an interview with Sky Sports a couple of days ago and was asked about it. And he had a very good line, did old Gianni, of saying, FIFA gives the red card to the blue card. We'll never see it in the FIFA game. Obviously, it's an IFAB rule. Obviously, they're sort of like the lawmakers of the game these days. Obviously, they're the ones that have destroyed the handball rule, so nobody knows what's handball anymore. But I get a feeling this isn't going to be the last we've heard of it, but I assume, what's your take on it? I assume it's as terrible as I think it is.
I mean, I don't. I can understand why, on the surface level, someone would think a sin bin idea could maybe work in football. First of all, if you're going to introduce a blue card, it shouldn't be a blue card. It should be an orange card, because that would be between yellow and red. So I don't know why you'd make it a blue card. Blue doesn't have like that urgency to it. I don't know why you'd make it a blue card. But anyway, that's very superficial. I do agree with it. I think it's actually Paul Merson who said this. Introduce sin bins work really well in a sport like rugby, because losing a man in for even for a brief period of time in rugby, the way it would affect your game plan for them 10 minutes is really important. But I think in something like football, it would just encourage defense. It would just encourage really defensive play for 10 minute, you know, for 10 minutes or however long
Time
it is.
wasting.
Time wasting, yeah, time wasting is already a huge problem in football. So I'm not sure it's. I'm not sure I'm against the trial of it, but just to be certain, but I do not see, I wouldn't have it. I just don't see, I don't see it being a solution. My solution would be just use the yellow card properly. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think just use it effectively and get better referees and get better standards of refereeing
I was
would be
going to say,
my.
how many debates do we have week to week about the awarding and not awarding of yellow and red cards? They can't even get the consistency of that right at the
Yeah,
moment
and
with
I
two
think
cards.
we've already seen a real overcomplication in the last few years of rules in football. There's some things have been introduced which have been amazing, like goal line technology. Bar that day at Villa Park has worked almost flawlessly, and it's mad to think we ever even debated that as something to be introduced. But things like VAR and the constant changing of the handball rule, have led to a like just extra layer upon layer of controversy in football week after week. It felt like there was a spell when we just constantly talked about decision making, rather like I know we do all the time, but there was this year in particular, there's a real period where all we talked about was decision making and based around new rules that have been introduced in football. So I don't think it's the way forward, and I, on a surface level, I can understand the concept of it, but I don't think it's maybe right for football. I don't think it would necessarily suit a sport that is already dealing with issues that would come with this, like time wasting. Like, there was already so much time wasting in football. And I think the solutions are already there in front of us, and that the referees already have the tools to implement it properly, which are their yellow and red cards. But yeah, equally, I'm not giving Gianni Infantino any praise, I don't think. I'm not a fan of his, and I think anything good that happens in football, he has nothing to do with, I would imagine, would be the... Because he's... I don't think he has the best interests of football at heart, shall we say. Is my hot take.
Where would you get such an idea from, Dan?
I know. Who would have thought the head of FIFA doesn't have a... They don't exactly have a history, do they? Of, but yeah, no. So what about you? What are your opinions on it?
I was going to say, to play maybe like... Not devil's advocate, but like... Let's just say they were going to put it in. Maybe there's a way they can make it work, which is, again, stealing something from rugby. At least from what I briefly saw of the very little of the Rugby World Cup I saw, was that... on decisions where they were unsure whether to award a yellow sin bin card or a send off red card, it was like they had a 10 minute timer or a 5 minute timer would come up on the screen. The player would go off the pitch into a sin bin, because obviously at the very least it's a yellow card, and the officials would have a time period to decide whether they wanted to award a red or just keep it as a yellow. And the player would come back on. And maybe that could work in terms of, rather than referees panicking and rushing to decisions, maybe in the VAR room, to actually take their time and get to the right decision, rather than a rush decision where we've all heard the audios of them shouting all over each other and like kind of panicking.
Yeah.
It would also involve us having to hear the audio of why they're making the decision, probably when they make the decision.
Sure.
And go from there. But I don't know what you think of that. Could that be the solution to the blue card?
It could, but here's the issue of comparing it to rugby. Rugby is a much more, like, let's be honest, it's a much more patient, understanding sport, yeah. From like a fan perspective. Like, football fans moan here about having to wait for any kind of decision. That's sometimes a good reason. A lot of the time a good reason. But in rugby, there's, you know, you watch like the Six Nations, there is that like tension to like a decision being made or a really long video ref review. And I think culturally, it's just a lot more accepted and suits rugby better. And it's that sport is for the better for it. And it's probably something football could take a leaf out of its book from. But, that's a cultural change that would just never happen, if you know what I mean. Football's a naturally quite hostile atmosphere, as we know from, you know, like years of going to games. More often than not, that's the atmosphere. I just don't think fans would accept more slowing down and more waiting. And you are absolutely right, though. If it was something they did, we would have to have ways of fans hearing the VAR room. But I just don't know how people say that. Well, there's a way that fans need to know what's going on, like in the stadium. I just don't know how feasible it. I don't know how feasible it is in football. I don't know how
you've. I don't know, but you've not been to a game. Have you been to a game which has had a VAR decision?
No, I haven't actually.
And it can be slightly ground dependent. So, like for example, Anfield and Old Trafford don't have big screens,
which is mad.
Which is mad, but so obviously they can't put anything on a screen because there isn't one. But inside the ground, say at Villa Park, where we've got two big screens, it's got to a point where you're not even looking at the screen because there's nothing on it other than a nice slate that says VAR checking whatever it is and maybe the name of the player that they're checking something against, which is always late. You already know they're checking it because the game hasn't restarted.
Yeah.
And then all I find myself doing is looking at the referee and the players around the referee, because you get that understanding of from the body language of the players what they're going to give. And even when the referee blows his whistle and gives his decision, it takes a good 15 seconds for them to change the slate or for them to say VAR complete. I know the VAR is complete because we've kicked off again. Take when we played Arsenal at home this season and there was the disallowed goal for Kai Havertz very, very late on in the game. In the whole end, we knew the goal had been disallowed before the ref had actually blown or given the decision, because Emi Martinez turned around to the hole and it started going like this.
Oh,
So it's
of course
obvious
he
that
did.
the goal had
Yeah.
been disallowed. So it's like, because I think what we've heard in some interviews is players are constantly talking to the referee during a VAR decision, going, what's happening? What are they checking? How likely is it that they're going to give it? And the referee tends to go, we're going to disallow it, and then it'll blow the whistle and what have you. So I think in the ground, if there's one thing to come from all of this, we've got to improve it in the ground. Even if it's
Sure.
just, if we can't play the audio, at least put, like on Sky Sports, you at least see what they're doing with the lines and all that. At least put that on the screen.
Yeah. I think VAR is just, I'm not at all against it. And I think the implementation of it just needs to be steadily improved. But I think it's just been rushed into the game way too quickly. It's gone too fast, too quick. And like the fact that it was first introduced at major levels at the World Cup, it was effectively trialed at the World Cup in Russia, is mad. You know, that kind of sums up the implementation of it, I think. Instead of baby steps, we've like gone full hog on it and are now steadily trying to, you know, work it out and fix it piece by piece. It's probably just too many cooks in the kitchen. And I will say, as someone who only goes to, like, pretty much only goes to championship games, I don't wish we had it at games. Like, it's so satisfying knowing once a goal is scored, you know if it's a goal or not, or a red card or anything like that, not having to wait for it. But that's just my opinion on it.
I'd say it's gone from being, I think, a bit like goal line technology. It was there to be a safety net, and it's not used. It's used to re-referee rather than be a safety net to stop the blunder decisions.
Yeah. Sure.
And that's maybe where it's going wrong.
Sure. But yeah, I think in summary on the blue card, first of all, if you're going to do it, change the color. But yeah, I don't think it's the solution, and I certainly don't think it's the solution right now, but I can understand the discussion taking place.
Double game week for both of us.
Yeah, man.
A huge, huge week for both clubs. Where I guess, I don't really know where to go from that. It's a huge week. You could be in the bottom three. You could be heading towards the playoffs. We could be comfortably heading for fourth place or out of Europe and having, you know, all sorts.
Yeah.
So do you want to take it away? Because
we're playing first.
Tuesday.
Yeah, we're playing Tuesday. So I won't spend too long on it, because by the time this people probably listen to this, there's a good chance the game's actually been played. We've got Hull City away Tuesday night. So would you like a mad stat, Cal? I know you like a stat.
Always.
So,
I love
I know
a stat.
We played Hull in the FA Cup this year, the third round, and we drew and played them in the replay. So this will be the fourth time we've played Hull this season. And here's a mad stat. Every time we've played them this season, we've had a different manager in charge.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a good start.
Yeah, so Eustace never got to play them. Rooney's first home game was against them. Then when Rooney got sacked, the FA Cup third round game was Steve Spooner took charge of. And then Tony Mowbray's first home game was the replay. And now Mark Venus is taking charge of this one. So, yes, mental. Hull, obviously, they're sitting sixth in the league at the minute. They're having a good season. We've spoken before about Liam Rossinho. What a great job he's doing there. What a good manager he is at this level. And I'd be interested to see him ever go in the Premier League someday, whether that's with Hull or not. They're on a 5-game unbeaten run, but they have drawn their last two. They drew against Preston at the
And
weekend,
the
I think it was.
baggies.
Yeah, and they drew against Baggies the week before that, which is, I would argue, is a point gained, because Baggies are looking very good at the minute as well. But before that, they'd won three in a row, including away at Southampton. So they are a very good team. We do not have a great record at their stadium at all, although we did win there last season. We won 2-0 there last season. Deeney and Bakuna both scored. But otherwise, our record there is awful. We hadn't won there for, I think it was 2000 and, I think it was 2009 we last won there before that. So yeah, it'd been about 13 years. So it was a very long time. So I think a draw would be a real point gained. I think it'd be seriously a point gained, especially with our current predicament. I think any away points, point gained at the minute. So I'll say they've drawn the last couple. I'll say 1-1, but we'll be up against it, and they'll look at us as a team they should beat. So yeah, 1-1.
And then on to
Yes,
Amsterdam.
Yeah, so you've got a big away day in Europe this week.
Yeah, remember everyone, it's at 5:45 UK time. It's not at 8 o'clock. So, I think it's only the second time we've played Ajax. Obviously, the last time was when we were in the UEFA Cup in like 2008, 2009. We had that famous win in the group stage at Villa Park. I don't really know what to expect from Ajax. Obviously, sort of on paper and sort of historically, you'd look at it and go, it's a very, very tough tie. But obviously, they're not having a very good season. They are very much struggling and they are there for the taking in many ways. I will be slightly, maybe pessimistic for the away leg. I will say it will be 1-1. Maybe a 2-1 win.
I'd take that. Like, blimey, is that being pessimistic?
Well, if you're being optimistic, I'd be like, oh, you're going to win 3-0.
I think a 1-1
But
draw at Ajax is a very good result.
I'll go with 1-1. The butterflies are going to start kicking in the next couple of days, as will the excitement, but also that sort of nervousness. It's a huge game against a big club. It's sort of your romantic tie, isn't it? When you get to this stage of the competition. So, there's not really too much to say. I hope Jacob Ramsey's fit, but I would be absolutely amazed if he is fit. Not sure who he'll start if Ramsey isn't fit because of it. So he might start. I just don't think he'll start Morgan Rogers in this game. He obviously brought him on against Luton and he did very well for 50 minutes until he was taken off again. Maybe it could be the return of a Zaniolo, although I'm not entirely convinced by what I see from him, but we'll see. But the only thing I want to see is Pau Torres and Ezri Konsa both playing in that defense. That would be a big boost. Torres didn't play against Luton, so hopefully he's good to go for Ajax. 1-1 and bring it on.
Very good. And yeah, the reverse leg's only a week later, isn't it? You only have to wait a week, don't you? Cool. Very good. To the weekend, we have then got a lovely trip to lovely Millwall on
The
Saturday,
dream away day.
the dream away day, that welcome you with open arms. Everyone talks so highly of the Den and how friendly they are there. Kind of
Six
incontrastable.
pointer.
Important to say, I know we have got a game in hand. It is important to say that on all the teams around us as well. That is important to bear in mind as well. But yeah, it's a 6-pointer. They're above us now. They're 2 places above us, I believe, in the league now. They've also had 3 permanent managers this season because they got rid of Rowett, and they got rid of Joe Edwards recently, and Neil Harris has gone back in there. On a little side note, Neil Harris left Cambridge United and Gary Monk has replaced him there today. Gary Monk's gone back into management, which is interesting. But yeah, Millwall away. They were having a really poor 2024, to be fair. They won on New Year's Day, but then they went on a really bad run of form. I think they lost. I think it was 7 out of 8 or something. I think it was 7 out of 8. Made the managerial change, and now they've won 2 games in a row. Obviously, they beat Southampton away as well. And they beat Watford at the weekend. So they've had a real spurt in performance lately. I don't really rate Neil Harris that much as a manager. Like, I don't think he's bad, but I don't rate him that much. But he is like Mr. Millwall, isn't he? He's who you get in at this point to like motivate the troops, and I can see why they've gone for him. But I also think the kind of desperation of the Championship has really shown this season, and how much is on the line when clubs like Millwall are making like 2 changes a season in managers. We've done it as well. There's a few that have done it. And you know, they're kind of like us. They got rid of, obviously we got rid of Eustace, and they got rid of Rowett, much like how we got rid of Rowett a few years ago because they weren't too happy with the performance levels. And I can see why, but look where they are now. It's really backfired on them. I think it's going to be
Weirdly, though, in all this managerial change, Watford haven't sacked their manager this year, have
yeah,
they?
I know, yeah, which is it's pretty crazy.
Who
Seeing as
would
they're
have
not having
predicted
a Yeah,
that?
they're not having a good season either, really. Not particularly good anyway. But yeah, I think it's going to be a really horrible physical game. I think it will be. I don't think it'll be pretty football. I think it'll be a proper blood and thunder championship dogfight game. And you say it's a 6-pointer. We do need to be winning games, but I also feel like just don't lose it as well. You know, like as bad as negative as that probably sounds, and similar to Hull, I think it'll be a similar result to the Hull game, which is ironic because I think Hull are a much better team, but Millwall are going to be at their place as well. I think it's going to be a pretty horrible place to go and try and get a result. It's ironic because we used to always play well against Millwall. We had years where we always won there 6-0 in 2012, I think it was. But then that's kind of tailed off the last few years. Although we did win there last season, Duke scored towards the end of the season as well. So yeah, I for these couple of games, I doubt Sanderson will be free because obviously he got sent off. I don't see his red card getting overturned, even though I think it should be. Interesting to see if Bielik will be back, but I think, as much as I'm not a huge fan of him, and the Blues fans I know will hate me for saying this, having someone like Mark Roberts back in there, to clarify, I would not renew Mark Roberts' contract in the summer, but for these two games, we're going to have to play him, because obviously we've sold long, Sanderson suspended, I don't know if Bielik will be fit at centre-back. Roberts, he's just big, strong, he'll just lump the ball into space every chance he gets. He probably is the kind of player who would suit these kind of games, especially that Millwall game, ironically. I'd maybe put... would I put Bakuna in after his performance at the weekend? I'm not sure. I'd maybe give Tyler Roberts a game. I'd definitely keep Paik and Dezelve in the midfield, though, because I think any composure they can bring to the game, that our team will bring to the game, they'll bring to the game in that midfield too. But yeah, I think it'll probably be two draws for us this week, and that wouldn't be the end of the world. Or if we won one and lost one, obviously, that'd be amazing. Don't care where that win comes from, but yeah.
And then the big one on Sunday, 2 o'clock, Villa versus Spurs. The race for fourth is a big, big game. Obviously, Spurs have already got a game in hand, but we're 5 points clear. So theoretically, obviously, if they win that game and they beat us, they'll obviously be above us. So even... it's not going to be the end of the world if they do beat us, because as I said earlier on in this podcast, I don't see them being infallible until the end of the season. And I do think that if there's a team that will be consistent out of the two of us to the end of the year, I do believe it'll be us. Having said that, if I would very much like us to win and go 8 points clear, and it just gives you that buffer then, because we've still got to play the likes of Manchester City, Arsenal and Liverpool, who are all going for the title. And, you know, our record at the Etihad is terrible, so I expect us to lose there, regardless. We'll talk about that in the weeks to come. But if we can get ourselves an 8-point buffer, that would be, it would just cap off, it would set us up at the very least for a very strong end to the season. You know, see how we do on Thursday. I want us to go very strong on Thursday. You know, we worked so hard to get into the Conference League. I'll be very, very pissed off if we don't take it seriously, because there's no point qualifying for competitions if you're not going to take it seriously. But hopefully it doesn't take too much out of us, because obviously with playing that extra game, Tottenham are going to really go for us on Sunday. And I think it could be a high-scoring game. I think, you know, it could be like another 3-2 or something. I'm going to predict another draw, I think. I think it could be... I'm going to go 2-2. I can just maybe see us being a bit tired. And again, it's a game where it could be goals aplenty. Son will probably score. He always scores against us. So we'll go for 2-2. Two draws would not be a bad result.
Yeah, I think you're being a little bit negative there. I'll be backing my boys in Ajax and the mighty Spurs, but I think if you were to get a draw in each of those games, they'd definitely be better draws for you than, I say get a point, obviously the one's a cup game, but a draw would be a better result for you than the opposition in both cases. Getting a draw away at Ajax and then a draw against Spurs still puts you in prime position in the top four race, so that, yeah, I think that'd be a very good return for you this week.
No, it's true, you make a very good point there. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Two draws, we'll take it. It's just that, it's that want to win, I think.
We've both said, we've both predicted four draws this week. I have a feeling that won't be what happens, though, let's be honest.
No, not a chance.
cool. Shall we wrap it up there, Cal?
Yeah, I think we should. If you have enjoyed today's podcast, do leave a like, subscribe on YouTube or Spotify or whatever. Leave a like. Did I say leave a like? If anyway, 5-star reviews, likes, subscribes, the whole lot.
Yeah, and you can find us on Twitter and TikTok with the handle Second City Pod. That's 2ND City Pod. Go back, listen to our Second City stories. We've done a few of them on former Blues and Villa players and kind of retrospective on their careers. So yeah, check them out. And until then, up the Ajax, up the Blues. It's goodbye from me. Keep right on.
And I'll catch you next week as well, Dan. Up the Villa, and I'll see you next week.
Shut on the Villa. See you then.